Greetings, and welcome to the IOMSN Town Hall Discussions conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Lori Mayer. Thank you, Ms. Mayer. You may begin.
Thank you, Doug. Good evening, everyone. My name is Lori Mayer. I'm Director of Medical Research Services for an MS clinic in Austin, Texas. And on behalf of the IOMSN and as co-chair, we'd like to welcome you to the program tonight, Town Hall Discussion. Tonight's program is entitled Resilience in MS, Enhancing Coping Mechanisms Through Nursing Practice. These educational sessions are held by telephone, and we've changed the date, as you've probably guessed. We're going to go second Monday of each month, and each town hall discussion will be led by one of our members who will be speaking on a selected topic for about 15 minutes, and then it will be followed by an open discussion. We will limit that discussion to about an hour. We would like to acknowledge and show our appreciation to Novartis for supporting this project through an unrestricted educational grant. Thank you, Novartis. And so tonight, we begin our town hall discussion this evening with Jen Smirka, who is my co-chair for the town hall discussions. And Jennifer is a board-certified adult nurse practitioner and board-certified multiple sclerosis specialty nurse. She has exclusively worked in MS since about 2003 as a clinician, a clinical instructor, a consultant, and a clinical research investigator. She has worked in both the academic and private sector in MS centers throughout her tenure as an MS nurse practitioner, and she's a very active member of the International Organization of MS Nurses and has been a board member, I believe, in 2008. She's been a consultant nurse practitioner for the CAN-DO MS organization since 2008, and she's a very active volunteer with the National MS Society, the MSAA, and in addition to the MS Foundation. Currently, she is just coming off of maternity leave, and she will be in a clinical private practice in South Florida shortly. So please join me in welcoming Jen for this evening's meeting. I'm turning it over to you, Jennifer.
Thanks, Lori. Thanks so much for getting on. I know, like Lori said, we've changed the town hall meetings to Mondays in hopes that it is a little bit more accessible for everyone's schedules. I know Wednesdays are tough because a lot of people are out of town, and Thursdays are tough because a lot of people are doing or attending speaking engagements. So I'm going to lead off tonight discussing resilience in MS. This is an area of my own interest and kind of an offshoot of Linda Morganti's work in HOPE and empowering patients. So this is a talk I actually initially had given at the consortium in Montreal and have kind of added on to it over the year with additional research that I've done. And so I just want to start off talking really kind of more of the physiologic factors of stress and NMS. And as nurses, really our function, I think, how I've been able to distill it down through my research is that, we really act as a patient's, I'd like to say, a healthcare coach. That's kind of how I've identified myself with patients, and that I don't have any special power to make them better. And I tell patients very clearly and upfront that, you know, when we're working together, there are two experts in the room, that they are the experts in their body. I'm never going to know their body the way they do. I have an expertise in the science, but my job really is to share the information, make my recommendations based on the evidence and the data, and to really work with them, coach them, cheerlead them through their process. But at the end of the day, it's they who have to invest in their own health and wellness and overcome the obstacles to getting to that place. And so that's really kind of the basis of where I'm grounding this kind of work in. And I have to first acknowledge a lot of thanks to Maria Sirois, who actually is a psychologist, did her residency at Dana-Farber and did a lot of work in children's cancer research. And she really actually is quite an expert on resilience and chronic illness. And if you have an opportunity to read her book, Everyday Counts, it's an amazing book. And I think it's really helped my work in nursing, just from a perspective of trying to get patients to buy into the fact that health is something that is on a continuum, and it's something that health and wellness can be obtained and achieved regardless of a chronic disease state, but it's something that requires an immense amount of daily work. So let me get into, just so you know, the slide set is available on the IOMSN website at www.iomsn.org. And so if you do have those open, you can follow along with me. If not, I'm just going to speak to the slides, but certainly you can go back. All of my references are on the slides. Not to belabor the point, but we all know MS is a very challenging disease. It's the most non-traumatic neurological illness occurring in young people, and certainly provides many, many challenges in respect to the fact that it's an uncontrollable disease. It's highly variable. There's a lot of unpredictability to it. And as such, really constitutes and causes much anxiety in patients. And so from the perspective of psychology, because I joke and say that all nurses are armchair psychologists, we want to look at what's the real stressors psychologically of MS. And we know that there are definitely physiologic and physical symptoms that are well documented that contribute to the neuropsychiatric complications which we see directly related to the inflammation and demyelination. You know, you think of things like frontal lobe lesions that certainly can cause emotional effects. And then also the indirect effects that we see, psychological effects that really are related to having to adapt to the unpredictable disease course. We don't necessarily consider MS as a neuropsychiatric disease, but certainly psychologists and psychiatrists do. And that's certainly because it is a disease that affects young people generally and threatens their personal autonomy, their independence, their dignity, and certainly any future plans. And when you look through the neuropsychiatric journals, they really quote, you know, and talk about MS and the neuropsychiatric features that you see commonly, and those are things like anxiety and depression and cognitive impairment and anger and irritability, and those are all things that can be diagnosed with DSM. Less commonly, but certainly can be exhibited in the disease process, are disinhibition. We think of things like pseudobulbar affect, delirium, psychosis, and that might may or may not be drug-related, dementia in later stages, and certainly we know now that that can occur very early on as well, and apathy, and then behavioral disturbances. And we can talk about this later in discussion, but certainly when we talk about behavioral disturbances, we think of things like personality disorders. And certainly anecdotally, between colleagues and I, when we've discussed patients who have pre-existing morbid personality disorders, it seems to be heightened or augmented by the disease itself, and I'm not sure if that's a result of coping deficits or, in fact, a physiologic effect that's occurring because of the disease and the demyelination. To get into a little bit meatier topic of the neurobiology effects of stress, just to re-examine, we all learned this in nursing school, but again, just to kind of give us an overview that stress really does kill us, neurologically and biologically, what's occurring with stress, remember, the sympathetic nervous system is stimulated. It responds to stress by increasing the heart rate, by decreasing or constricting the blood vessels, increasing blood pressure, and decreasing digestion. Your body immediately goes into a fight or flight response under significant amounts of stress. And in response to acute and chronic stress, the hypothalamus then is stimulated. It secretes corticotropin releasing factor, which in turn induces the release of adrenocorticotropin hormone, or ACTH. ACTH, again, stimulates the synthesis and release of cortisol and DHEA from the adrenal gland. You guys didn't realize you're getting a neuroanatomy and a biology lecture tonight, right? But if stress remains chronic and constant, actually it's very deleterious. The prolonged elevations of cortisol that is released because of the ACTH stimulation of the adrenals can cause serious adverse effects long-term, such as immune suppression, hypertension, dyslipidemia, and osteoporosis. But what's interesting is that we know, especially with ACTH and DHEA, actually has some anti-glutamate
cholinergic activity in the brain and actually may confer some neuroprotection, which is an area for ripe for discussion for another time. But just really a summary of what happens neurologically, biologically, when we are under stress. So to turn this discussion now really more to resilience and how, as nurses, can we really empower and promote resilience with our patients, just to give you a straight definition from the dictionary, resilience is really considered the capability of a strained body to recover its size and shape after a deformation caused by compressive stress. Now, when you take a patient and you think of compressive stress, a huge life change like a diagnosis of MS certainly causes strain. So the ability to recover from that or adjust easily to that misfortune and change really is our own resource of resilience. And we all have it. It's just the ability of finding it again and really tapping into that resource for coping. We know that resilience, when it's utilized from a neuropsychiatric perspective, it does seem to be associated with an ability to keep that hypothalamic pituitary axis and adrenal axis and the noradrenergic adrenergic activity within an optimal range during stress exposure, and it actually terminates the stress response once the stressor is no longer present. So it's actually, the whole idea that the mind-body connection does absolutely exist, and we have the ability to control that. We may not be able to remove the stressor, but we certainly, if we adapt to it with coping mechanisms, we certainly can turn off that sympathetic nervous system response of fight or flight. So when we look at MS, we have the chronicity effects, which cause really, dealing and coping with feel overwhelmed. We often know that they feel alone, they have a sense of loss of control, and that unpredictability certainly leads to a lot of anxiety and despair. But the power of hope, which is what we as nurses hopefully can instill and promote, can improve a person's perception of their future. And even if it's inaccurate, it has a substantial influence on their quality of life. So patients who expect or hope for a favorable future usually rate much higher than a pessimistic patient on health-related quality of life indices, regardless of what their doctors think might be a more realistic appraisal. So the idea is, and we see this all the time in placebo groups with clinical trials, is that even the placebo patients do much better than patients who are on no drug at all because of that power of hope. And so I think of Linda Morganti, who was a mentor of mine, and her conceptual framework of hope, and that, when we take the challenges of multiple sclerosis and we develop a good nurse-patient relationship, we have the ability then to educate and collaborate with our patients and offer them skills to develop for coping. And of course, these skills are culturally competent, and we identify the appropriate utilization of resources for patients so that they can obtain wellness and a quality of life and continue to provide them hope and empowerment. And we also do this through educating them and collaborating with them about going on to disease modification and symptom management. And we do this every day when we're working with patients, really trying to get them to invest in their own wellness and their well-being. So additional strategies to enhance coping is really to promote self-efficacy, and that's really telling the patient that they are an expert. They have the ability to control certain things. Certainly we can identify factors in their health that would absolutely factor in and influence whether they would do well or not. Things like exercise, their lifestyle features, their diets, whether they smoke, whether they have a good support system. These are things that we can, as nurses, really can strongly contextualize for patients so that they themselves have a sense of self-efficacy, because that certainly strongly predicts their psychological adjustment to MS, and this is very much interlinked with their self-esteem, their ability to combat depression, and their own sense of self-worth. And we should really, as nurses and with our physician collaborators, work to involve our patients in the treatment plan and plan of care. So ways we can do this also is that the therapeutic partnership between the nurse should be not only through the relationship with the patient, but also with the family. We want to tie them in as well, and we want to promote an intellectual and an emotional bond that's focused on both the patient and the family, and it's based on mutual trust, respect, and acceptance. We want to promote confidentiality, and the relationship between the patient and the nurse and the family and the nurse should promote confidentiality. It should focus on well-being. It should promote acceptance, empowerment, and well-being with the patient, and it should respect the patient and the family both as an individual and as a unit, and it should also reflect respect and accepting the patient's right to choose their own way and choose, we're not offloading all of the treatment options on them and telling them to choose, but at the same time, we're not also doing the prescriptive saying, this is the drug you need to take and you need to take it now. We need to offer education and counseling along with that and consider their ethnic and their cultural aspects, and also what are their health beliefs and their values. We don't want to kind of run over their sense of autonomy or their ability to engage in their investment in their own health care. One of the things that I use with patients kind of early on in the relationship within the first 6 months is there is a, on the website in my presentation, there's a signature strength self-rating scale that I have used. It has not been validated in MS, but what it is it's a way to assess a patient's character strengths. It's a list of probably over 100 characteristics. And what I generally do is give it to the patient, have them go through and circle 10, at least 10, if they can identify 5 to 10 of the character strengths that they themselves believe they possess. And then I ask them to put it on the refrigerator. And it's helpful as a visual aid that when times get tough, they can go back to this. And it's self-reported. These are the things that they know they possess that they can tap into as a resource when those times are tough. I have found that patients tell me that it's helpful, and it just reminds them that they are more than their MS. There is more to them than meets the eye, and certainly more than symptoms. Additionally, ways to foster resilience and enhance coping skills is that we want patients to see that when they are resilient, they find themselves to be much more adaptable. They hopefully can see humor in situations, kind of finding the silver lining. More importantly, they know who and when and where to turn for help and can handle uncertainty and don't become derailed by it. Certainly, MS can be a paradigm or really an anecdotal, an analogy, I should say, rather, for life, and that, you know, there's a lot of things in life we can't control, but we certainly have full control of how we respond to these things. So when I talk to patients about resilience, I talk to them about trying to look at the glass as half full, being optimistic, persevering, hopefully getting them to feel strong as a person, that they can handle uncomfortable situations, and that eventually they can think clearly and logically under pressure. And that's really what we all are able and capable of doing once we kind of tap into the inner resources that we all possess. Once we can get a patient to feeling that they have resilience, that they acknowledge that they do have that, they generally feel a little bit more in control of their life. The idea is that when one kind of taps into that resource of resilience, they have the tendency to bounce back after a hardship or an illness. They can rely on those close, dependable relationships that they harvest and cultivate. And over time, maybe actually enjoy challenges. And I'm not saying that they appreciate their MS, but they certainly may be able to look at it as not all completely a crisis. I actually have gotten patients to a point where they can look at their MS introspectively and see where good has come from having the disease, whether it's strengthened relationships with their marriage, has brought them closer to the reality that life is short and fleeting and to live each day to its fullest, not to get them to be completely existentialist, but to the point where they honestly have more of an appreciation and have gratitude for what they are capable of doing. Also, getting to a point where having a sense that things happen for a reason and that maybe later on they'll be able to make sense of the situation so that they can move in a more positive direction, that they can't always explain why things happen, but know that, you know, potentially and hopefully everything happens for a reason and at some point we'll be able to make sense of it all. the way we can do, as nurses, MS nurses, the way that we can empower patients in a very specific and kind of grounded way is really want to facilitate goal setting. Again, kind of implying that we are health coaches. We're here on the sidelines. We're helping patients. We're kind of cheering them on. We want to provide experience with their peers. We do this a lot by starting support groups, facilitating support groups, providing affirmation, letting them know they did a great job. You know, when we talk to them about their compliance and their adherence to medication is really moving them into a place where they're adhering to their medication because it's something that they truly are invested in doing. And that we get them to a point where they want to maximize their wellness because they know that they feel better when they're doing things that are good for them, like improving their sleep hygiene or putting better, or making better choices at the dinner table, encouraging motivation and persistence, and certainly they can do this with access to their peers as well, and just giving them affirmations really on their personal value and strength and know that, you know, I think all MS nurses are really good about letting patients know that there's so much more than their disease process, that we want to help them to define themselves by something other than their MS. I often will say to a patient and try to give them perspective that even though they have a chronic illness, it should not define them and they're not destined to be chronically ill, that each day they need to take as one day at a time, and that wellness is a positive striving unique opportunity, that each day we have an opportunity to make choices that can either help or hinder our wellness and our ability to achieve health. And that's really a state of mind and part of a continuum. And throughout our life, depending on the choices we make, we can either help or hinder our ability to achieve wellness. There's a couple of slides that I'm going to briefly gloss over just because I know we're coming down to the wire for time. One is the empowering through the wellness model. In the traditional nursing process, you know, we all know the assessment, the diagnosis, outcome identification, the planning, the implementation, the evaluation. You might remember it as ADPI was kind of the acronym that we used to use in nursing school. And that's the traditional. The wellness nursing model, really, the process is a little different. For assessing a patient, we're really implementing the whole person and their wellness, not only the disease state in which we're working in, but the patient's helping to perform the self-assessment. They're actually looking at what are their goals. They're also involved in trying to determine what their goals are for achieving success. What does success mean to them? When we're diagnosing them, obviously coping deficit is probably the most utilized diagnosis when we're working with resilience, but we want to also take the opportunity to identify the learning needs of the patient and based on their belief systems, and that the patient really determines those needs, and as well as the wellness goals. And the patient learns to self-evaluate the results in addition to our ability to implement self-efficacy strategies, and the patient actually implements the self-care. So winding down, ways that we can assess the patient's coping skills, really, when you're using a nursing diagnosis of ineffective coping skills, you're going to hear things like the patient may be saying over and over, well, why me? It's really not fair, or they may be using a lot of negative language in their review of systems or in their chief complaints, things like, well, I can't do X, Y, or Z, or I'm unable to do the things that I wasn't able to do. And that just those words alone obviously doesn't necessitate an ineffective coping skill nursing diagnosis. But if you find in your counseling and in your education that these negative language continues to come up, and you all know those patients who really have defeatist attitudes, that they really are just very pessimistic about things, this is where it would be appropriate to utilize and to maybe foster some resilience. And ways of doing that is I've kind of gotten to a place where patients, through my work and through different paradigms of treatment, is really getting them to focus on what they can do. So you kind of elicit what they're unable to do, and then we try to really focus on, okay, you're not able to do this. How can we modify and adapt it so that you can do something else? So we really help to try to change the semantics and, in effect, changing the attitude. So, for example, when I'm doing injection training, I will say to a patient, you know, tell me about how you are doing your injections. And I listen for them if they're eliciting things like, well, I give myself an injection or I do this to myself. kind of taking on that very passive language, I always try to get them to say, no, you're doing this for yourself because this is one thing that you have full control over that you can do to fight your MS. And then I get them to try to look at MS, is it a crisis or an opportunity, and trying to get them to contextualize their MS is that, yes, it can be very bad and certainly very defeating to have the diagnosis, but is there any good that's come out of having this diagnosis, and getting them to try to look for that silver lining. And then also to identify the factors that are not predictable, or excuse me, are not unpredictable, and getting them to really buy into optimizing each of those things. And those would be things like their diet, their exercise, their sleep hygiene, their ability to hydrate on a daily basis, choosing a good support system, and, of course, most importantly, their attitude and choosing their own attitude. And then I'll just close with this, is that, you know, if we can get patients to go from a place of why me, which is very passive and kind of victim language, to a place of who am I in the face of this, getting that statement out there of who am I in the face of this really recognizes that, one, yes, you're acknowledging that there is something that you're struggling with, but you're also acknowledging that you possess resources and character strengths that will hopefully propel you past whatever the obstacle is that's in your way. And then I often will put a quote up to patients by Viktor Frankl, who was a neurologist and a psychiatrist and a Holocaust survivor. And he wrote a fascinating book called Man's Search for Meaning of Life in 1956 after his Holocaust experience. And he quoted, he would say, you know, everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, and the ability to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose your own way. And I often will say this to patients, and I have it up in my office, just to remind them that, again, life happens all around us and to us, but what we choose to make of those circumstances is really our choice, and we do have control over that. So I will close that out and open the forum up now for discussion.
Again, that was an excellent presentation. I listened to you talk, and I can hear your passion. I can hear your passion for your patients. And you really went into a very in-depth, holistic view of resilience and what it means for the MS patient. And so I guess there are just so many different aspects that I hadn't really thought that much about when you talked about the neurobiological perception and the neuropsychiatric perception being involved in this. But it really kind of comes down to that resilience. Do you think it's so much just learning to adapt to adversity?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think even when you look back, like evolution, right? I mean, even the most basic and primitive, how we adapt is how we actually move and evolve. And to me, it's such a profound thing when it comes to health because it's our ability, you know, it's kind of Darwinian, right? So only the strong survive. And so you can use all of these colloquialisms and euphemisms of like what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, but in effect, it's actually quite true. And there is actually a lot of science and meat behind that when you look at the neurobiology of resilience and the neurobiological effects of stress and the fact that, you know, you can actually look at stress and the oxidative results that occur at a cellular level. And that actually does contribute to apoptosis and cell death and inflammation in the body, not necessarily directly related to MS, but we see that in other immunological issues and certainly in cancer. Now, I don't want to divert the discussion to those things, but I'm just saying, in effect, it's our ability to adapt that allows us to continue on. And so with patients, I really try to spend time with them at some point during the relationship and really kind of dig deep into these areas. And obviously, you have to have a level of trust already established with the patient and a relationship to get into these kind of deeper, beneath the surface discussions. But I think because of nursing and how we approach health and wellness and disease prevention and health promotion, we are at a much better advantage to do so than our physician counterparts.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, we'll now be opening up the lines for questions. Doug, if you'd like to open up the queue.
Certainly.